SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
From Santa Anita Park, last morning here in Arcadia for Breeders' Cup 2019 before we head home this afternoon. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, just, I forgot my own name, stevebick.com. I actually, it's very funny because I slept until 5 a.m., which would be 8 o'clock Eastern, and been here how long? Since a week ago, Saturday night. So 7, 8, 9, 10 days, and I had not slept past 2 a.m. In whatever 9 nights, and I did sort of rouse, and then I closed my eyes, and the next thing I knew it was like 4:55. So I was stunned, and I should be fresh as a daisy, right? But an extra 2 or 3 hours of sleep. But I don't know. I don't know if that's the case. When you get up every day, essentially at five, and prepare for the show, Eastern time, and then you come here, it's hard to, you know. You know what this means, of course. I'll get home tonight, and tomorrow morning I'll want to sleep until 8:30. That's the worst, right? When you do a time change and you stay someplace long enough that your body makes the shift. Well, we've got the second day to continue to digest everything, and we're going to talk to Brad Cox. Nacho Correas, we'll check in with Andy. John White's going to be here. Vince DeGregory, as promised yesterday, the amazing Vince Gregory, 86 or 87 years old, and originally from Greenwich, born and raised in Greenwich. It's the craziest thing, and I got to know Vince, 20 years ago. And, of course, there's anybody that's been, whenever you come into racing, that's how long you've known Vince DeGregory. If you've been in racing 50 years, that's how long you know Vince. This is true of everybody. And I don't know if there's truth to the rumor that Vince hot-walked Seabiscuit. I just could make things up, although it's actually possible, right? It's technically possible. Looking forward to it. Vince was on, my God, I bet you it's somewhere in the aughts. I would say somewhere between 2006 and 2008. So a long time between drinks for Vince DeGregory on the show. And he'll sit in and regale us with some tales of yesteryear, and boy, are they welcome in light of some of this continued aftermath and the confusion and the recriminations are just it's very difficult and of dubious benefit to try to, backtrack. You can certainly internally learn from decision making and the processes, but the one question about people, well, they never should have come back. They should have abandoned the concept of having the Breeders' Cup at Santa Anita. That's easy to say in light of how things ended here in the last 300 yards. But at the same time, there didn't appear And from all indication, there wasn't a suitable and at the ready alternative that was interested in having the event. Then there was the whole matter of abandoning Santa Anita and, you know, the California racing community and the message that that sent. Now, you're going to have to, I suppose, at some point, look back and figure out which would have been, which turned out to be worse, having the event and the circumstances and whatever the fallout is going to be versus what the fallout would have been had the event moved. And the inner workings here, contractually and that element and all the things that went into that decision, which was, you know, agonizing at the time, and many people, you know, hailed and felt was the right thing to do. Then you get into all the things that were going on with a team of 30 veterinarians. 30. And evaluating the horses on a day-to-day basis, and that includes, you know, right up to the morning of the racing on Friday and Saturday, horses that were taken out of the event. So there certainly was a aggressive posture involved, and that's what makes, you know, part of what we're hearing here in the last, you know, 24 to 36 hours from, you know, particularly from Governor Feinstein's office. You know, one thing that she said in this statement that's obviously being written for her and forced, you know, through her. It's obvious. She said, it's obvious. I don't have it in front of me, but it's obvious that that whatever measures are being taken aren't enough. Well, isn't that the whole point of what we discussed, in fact, yesterday? That the measures, the attempts to filter through and anticipate horses that may be vulnerable and at risk, that was as heightened as it possibly could be. And in light of what, you know, some people are saying, you know, the workout that Inhibish Gambat was not happy with and so forth, and that, you know, watching him, you know, on the track and coming off the track, you know, the people, you know, with trained eyes, not you know, internet veterinarians, you know, saying that there was something, there's something amiss here, and that he wasn't 100%, and how did they miss it? Well, that's the question everybody asks, and that doesn't have to be Breeders' Cup. Whenever a horse goes wrong, everybody around it, and, you know, all the racetrack practitioners, all the jurisdiction employed veterinarian staff that monitor and you know, work to anticipate the issue, that's true on a daily basis nationwide and worldwide. And I'm sure the morning that line of duty, the Godolphin Charlie Appleby's yard a week ago Saturday, I'm sure, you know, when he suffered a catastrophic injury, everybody had, you know, his groom and everybody that got him ready to go out and gallop, they were all just as vigilant. And I don't know, as I said to yesterday to Peter and Lafitte, how are you going to explain? Peter said that there's no ready and easy explanation when you're dealing with some unknowns. You can only try to provide as safe an environment for the horses and riders as you can. And I think the concern is and should be that the people that don't seem to understand that or even have any interest in understanding it, no amount of effort will satisfy them. The critics. So trying to placate that element is going to be a moving target and an elusive target. The fact is, the industry in the last two decades, I said this yesterday in one shape or form, the industry over the last two decades became more and more acutely aware of these concerns as well as the aftercare issues and have moved deliberately and successfully in all of those areas, in every area. And when there's been clusters like the 2012 task force, I bristle when I hear and read some things that the industry's hasn't done anything. That's just completely false. A complete lie. I won't even say misrepresentation. It's a complete falsehood. If anybody actually took the time and went through the series of initiatives, obviously in New York with the task force for welfare and safety and what that has successfully implemented, go through the work of the THA and the HBPA that has, you know, delivered messages for vigilance and improvement at every level. And I don't think it's even reasonable. I was going to say practical. It's not reasonable to expect that, you know, every issue on the tick list, it can be implemented and successfully executed like turning on a switch. You just work at each of these areas in your respective environment. Peter Ertin said, you know, right from the beginning, right from the birth of a foal, you know, the best practice concept, and you just keep getting better at it and better. And it means a constant evaluation of the surfaces. And if there's a better surface in any environment, the repairing of bases, improved material for cushion, better track maintenance, every element, then you all, you know, all things like, you know, the area in the sales arena that Jess Jackson improved, that environment, the foals, the declaration of foal surgeries, and on and on. I mean, this is a complex, this is more complex, this business, this industry, the sport, there's more moving parts in this industry than in any you could possibly think of. I try to think of something that is as intricate and unusual and complex. And so that means there's no easy answers. And it gets back to what we talked about earlier in the winter about being good stewards. in the area of which you contribute to the industry. Every single portion along the timeline and, you know, the course of the horse's life, and, you know, all the business ends from, you know, from the farm to the sales arena to the development of yearlings into two-year-old racehorses, track executives, cognizance, being respectful of all the working parts, appreciating the horse player, working harder to make the game more attractive to them, because more handle equals more revenue equals more tools for, you know, better practices and management and everything. But it is a huge undertaking, and it has to basically fall to each and every participant in the game. And I don't know what else. I don't know how many other ways to address it that are possible. So we'll celebrate with quite a few of the winners. Aaron Wellman, who had a fascinating, I mean, wild weekend, even on Sunday when Independence Hall, that Nashua win. And we'll talk to Aaron, Brad Cox, I mentioned. Who else? Andy, I'm forgetting, Nacho Correas, John White, Fitzgerald. Stay with us. It's going to be a fun morning. Last in California.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sports Form Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Form delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and Kent DeSarmo on Afternoon Delights, absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky, or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9
biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
In love, sageless, the winner never comes. In love, sageless, the mother's milk, they young. But I can keep running, no, I can keep running.
We're back at the races, 20 minutes into hour one on this Tuesday, our last day here in Los Angeles. And Aaron Wellman joining us, not from the San Diego area, because he flew to Lexington. And, of course, tonight, the Night of Stars at Fasig Tipton, and any number of big names through the ring, the broodmares, including Blue Prize, Nacho Correas, will join us after we talk to Aaron. And it was nice enough to celebrate Sharing's win with him on Friday with Graham Motion and Clips. But then on Sunday, quite quietly, out of sight, and at Aqueduct, the third day of the Aqueduct meeting, perhaps the most exciting two-year-old male just burst forth. And Aaron, the nice bookend Friday and Sunday to the weekend. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me on.
A pleasure. And you got in late. You sound a little bleary, but we'll perk you up talking about these two-year-olds, the filly on the turf and the boy on the Constitution on the main track. Talk about Sharing. Start out there, and how everything came to be.
Yeah, I mean, what a weekend it was. It's just really gratifying to have weekends like this for our partners and for our brand. It just sort of gives you a little shot in the arm that all the work is worth it, and all the hard-earned dollars that our partners invest into our program, gets a thrill here and there for them. So that was huge, and we've been knocking on the door. We started the company 8 years ago. We've had a Breeders' Cup runner, at least one, every year since then, and we've been really close a few times, but never got a W. So to do it with Sharing on Friday was just a euphoric experience. What a filly she is. She's been special from day one, and to see the plan come to fruition like it did, to be surrounded by such wonderful partners involved in the partnership, including Anthony Beck of Gaines Bay Farm. John Gaines, of course, was the founder of Breeders' Cup, which added special meaning to it. And then, of course, to no pun intended, but to share it with Graham and his family was extremely meaningful. And to watch Manny, just burst with emotion after the wire with his Breeders' Cup win, it was a perfect storm of positive events, and we're just so fortunate to have been in that position.
In the aftermath, and we'll talk about the race and the mechanics and so forth, and even in fact her whole development arc to arrive here for the Future Star Friday opportunity, but the fact, Aaron, that this filly was even available for public consumption as a sales prospect is a little bit remarkable. Shared account, of course, herself, a Breeders' Cup winner by Spitestown and bred by Sagamore. Usually operations that of that ilk, they sell the boys, they keep the girls. And for her to even be available, to me, was a storyline.
It's a good point, Steve. It's a motto that I live by day in and day out. No matter how I'm looking to acquire equine talent, is the good horse can come from anywhere at any time. And you almost have to prevent yourself from thinking too much about why. And certainly when a filly like this comes to market from an operation like Sagamore, who you would think would want to retain something like her for their broodmare brand, the first question you ask is, why would they be selling her? There's got to be an angle.
There's a hole somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. And quite frankly, sometimes those have been some of the most fortuitous plays that I've been able to make on behalf of Eclipse and and in my career is being in the right place at the right time and not ruling out opportunities like this because something smells a little fishy. So obviously on paper, she's by a Breeders' Cup winner in Spikestown. She's out of a Breeders' Cup winner in Share the Count, who happens to also be by a Breeders' Cup Classic winner in Pleasantly Perfect. So
that's right.
I have to do some research, but I'm not sure that there's too many Breeders' Cup winners who have that type of Breeders' Cup lineage other than her. And for her now to have won a Breeders' Cup race is pretty spectacular. But yeah, you know, you're exactly right. And, you know, we do our work. Obviously, physicality is paramount over pedigree. We like the filly physically. She was very racy, very athletic. Not perfect, but she had some flaws that I was willing to accept. And she had the scope to hopefully develop into a really nice filly in due course. So, you know, we go through our due diligence. We vetted her so that if by chance she fell within a reasonable price range where we thought there was value there, we were going to be in play. So I've been really lucky in situations like these with fillies in particular with big-time pedigrees that fit the bill physically. And if they happen to fall through the cracks to a certain degree and offer value that I believe could be important to our partnership, we're gonna raise our hand and try to bring her into the stable. And that's what happened. 350 is a lot of money. But at the time, I felt as though, you know, her ovaries provided us with a big fallback position.
A safety net. And,
yeah, there was a lot of inherent residual value there. And if we were fortunate enough to have a runner on our hands, you know, sky was the limit. And we sent her down to Stone Street Farm in Brennan. Kudos to him. Right off the bat, as soon as we put a saddle on her back, Ian, who's not one to really tout horses, especially at an early stage in their development, he had her pegged right away. He knew she was precocious. He thought there was a lot of talent there from day one, and he treated her like it. You would have thought that she would perhaps have been a little later developing, but Ian was spot on, allowed her to develop at her own pace, and she just took everybody every step of the way. And she got to Graham, got into his program flawlessly, and from there, Graham was simply masterful and hitting every target that we had set out for her. And of course, she's got to have the horse to do it. Graham did his job, Manny did his, and we were the benefactors of the incredible experience on Friday winning a championship race.
You know, she debuted at Saratoga, and I remember, you know, I remember that race, and then came back in that off the turf, middle of the meet, and you know, the one the debut in July was before I, you know, I ended up blind without a cane, and so it was when I was still, you know, able to, right at the beginning of the meet, was able to come the first 10 days, and then the off the turf. And she actually, you know, she ran very well in that group, and you know, beat Al Gold's Good Shabbos, and you know, that win by open lengths. But there was never a question that she was going back to the grass, it seems.
Well, I wouldn't say there was never a question, but it was certainly our preference. You had to bring up her debut when she was 11-12-1 on the occasion and was pretty much unsaddled and came flying and only got beat about a neck. I don't gamble often, but we liked her that day. She was under the radar at that point, and that was a tough one. But at least she validated what we had believed all along, was that she was a supremely talented filly. And she did that going 5.5. And then we tried to stretch her out on the grass. And she was actually on the AEs the week prior to her breaking her maiden, and she came back again, entered on the grass. It was rained off. We ran her 7/8 on the dirt. She took care of business. We weren't afraid of running her on the dirt that day because she had trained very well on the dirt all along, but we had seen some things on the grass that told us that she could be extraordinary. So she broke her maiden by open length, 7/8 on the dirt, just displaying her versatility on that day. She was named a TDN Rising Star with that performance on the dirt. But from there, we really were working backwards from Breeders' Cup Future Stars Friday. And Angel Cordero, who is Manny Franco's agent, had seen Sharon Breeze on the grass at Saratoga. He called me as she was galloping out one day, and he said, "I haven't seen a filly do something like that on this turf in about 10 years, minimum." And coming from Angel, that was gospel to me. And it made it very clear that we need to hone in on the turf. So from there, it was a matter of wanting to have proper spacing between her maiden win and her next race. And then from that race, should all go well, to the Breeders' Cup. And we really wanted to try to limit her travel, get her a two-turn race, but at the same time have a strong enough race into her that, knowing that she'd have to go to the Breeders' Cup selection committee, do enough to be able to qualify for the Breeders' Cup. And that race was the Salima. She was an emphatic winner on that day. She ran much faster than the Colts division of the same race on the same card. And the nerves from that point were, A, did she do enough to qualify? And B, can we just keep her healthy for 6 weeks? Because we knew we had a loaded gun if we were able to do that going into Future Stars Friday. And thankfully, it all worked out. Again, I can't say enough about the job that Graham and his staff did with this filly. Having her so primed for Friday's performance, everything had to go flawlessly, and it did. And there's no margin for error in these races. And
no.
Between the preparation that Graham did with her and Manny's ride that day was an incredibly poised performance that, for his first Breeders' Cup win, he deserves an incredible amount of credit.
He had a great weekend, too, overall, Manny did, and with the limited opportunities, and certainly moving forward. And you talk about how everything has to go right. I mean, if they run this race a bunch of times, Albina, as well as Daye, the two of the Euro players in here, they absolutely found trouble and found traffic. And, they would, if you mixed and matched those two, and also with Todd, with Sweet Melania as well, if you mix these four up, and probably Chad's filly, who was fifth selflessly, who ran kind of even. But the two Euros in particular had trips that kind of may have found sharing, having to deal with them in the late stages. And so Manny placing her where he did was really invaluable, and pushing the button when he did to take over, it was just perfect. And you talk about that that opening career opener and betting her that day. Well, I know you're a listener, and so you know that we were shoving her down everybody's throat all week. So
good. Well, I hope you guys and all your listeners cashed big. I've heard countless stories. Considering how many people I know did make scores, I can't believe she paid 13-1. But we'll take it, and I'm glad for everybody else as well.
Well, that's the beauty of the 14-horse field. There was too many good ones in here. And frankly, you look at it, the only horse that was in single digits that did not really impact the race was John Kimmel's. And I talked to John, in fact, Sunday morning. And, the race was over for her early when she got, shuffled back too far. And Rosario really, there was nothing to do. But she was really the only one. The four horses after sharing, a little under 4-1 for Daye, a little under 5-1 Sweet Melania, 5-1 for Albina, and 15-2 on Selflessly. So the public was right, second through fifth, and sharing for those that founder, and well done. Spitestown is mentioned, and yesterday I brought up with Todd how, you know, not only was it a magical day for him, and you've had a long association yourself with Todd Pletcher, but you looked around the results, Aaron, and Todd, the shadow, the long shadow of Todd was all over the place. Palace Malice, the sire of Structor, and
we were actually the underbidder on when Mike Ryan bought Structor. Him for Chad.
Wow, how about that?
So that was a little frustrating having seen that happen, but happy to see the horse do it. And obviously, we've got connections to Palace Malice, which was phenomenal to see. But
with
Todd's,
yep,
yeah, Todd's fingerprint on the industry at large, and having it highlighted on Breeders' Cup weekend, it's just, you can't say enough about what he does on the racetrack and the factory of stallions that he produces year in and year out is second to none. I don't know that anybody in the game has come even close to having that type of impact in the breeding shed.
There was talk in the aftermath about some lofty goals. Talk about Graham will be with us tomorrow. Graham, when I reached out to him, we couldn't connect on Monday. So then when I reached out to him for today, he said, well, I'm in Vegas and we're heading.
Yeah.
It's a Vegas. It's Graham Motion, Vegas, one night only. And made me laugh because the picture of Graham in Vegas is kind of that draws a smile. It's kind of humorous for some reason. I can't see.
Yeah,
Graham,
something tells me that he's more of a high end restaurant and fierce show kind of guy rather than the seedy side of Vegas. But I think it's good. You know, these trainers, they work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. I encourage my guys, you know, you've got to find little moments to be able to decompress and get away from it all and recharge your batteries. And, you know, Graham is certainly deserving of that. So I was glad to see that he and his wife, Anita, were getting away for a few days. And it's important, you know, it's a lot of people that don't get a chance to see behind the scenes don't really understand, and it's impossible to appreciate what these guys do, but the Graham Motions, the Todd Pletchers of the world, they're around the clock, and the results speak to that, but you've got to take time to recharge your batteries when you can. So I'm all for Graham being in Vegas and enjoying himself.
It was pretty fun. Talk about what he mentioned as a potential goal next year. How serious is that going to be looked at?
You know, it would be a dream to be able to take a legitimate filly over to Royal Ascot. Obviously, the coronation would be the primary target if we were to go that route. Graham has roots in the UK, of course, and he's taken a few runners over there with pretty decent success from a small sample. So he's had the experience, which I think is huge. He knows what it takes to get a horse over there in proper form and a type of horse that could potentially be effective over there. So, you know, it's an enterprising and ambitious goal for us to be thinking Royal Ascot 8-9 months from now. But we do have a lot of conviction that this is an extraordinary filly. She has the disposition and the constitution to be able to do it. And if she continues to train on from 2 into her 3-year-old year, it's certainly something that we've got to keep in mind. That said, you know, as you mentioned earlier on, there's not a whole lot that's discouraging us from thinking dirt possibly as well. So, you know, with the Kentucky Oaks on the radar, I don't think there's any distance limitations to this filly. It's just a matter of whether, you know, she shows the same type of brilliance on the dirt as she has on the turf. But we'd be foolish to shut the door on that as well. I was fortunate enough to be associated with Team Valor as that company's vice president during Animal Kingdom's development. And Graham, of course, was instrumental in bringing him along in his 3-year-old year. And he was predominantly a turf and synthetic horse until the week before the Derby, when he took him for a test drive around the oval at Churchill Downs beneath the Twin Spires, and he worked well enough to justify a tilt at the Kentucky Derby, and everybody knows how that ended up. So Graham and I have a direct comparison to be able to make from Animal Kingdom, hopefully into sharing. So that certainly is on the table as well. These are all lofty ambitions, but the filly has certainly warranted us being able to think in such a big way.
Very nice. We'll wait and watch. Meanwhile, and it's funny because Chad also with Structor said immediately that he said this is a horse that we absolutely will get the share of dirt tries. So sharing and will be memorable for all kinds of reasons, and we'll look forward. Maryland bred as well, and a nice feather for the Maryland bred program. And Aaron, let's talk about Sunday, shift gears, and Mike Trombetta with Independence Hall in the Nashua. This was a serious group of two-year-olds that wasn't getting a lot of notice just because of what was happening here. And what for those that haven't seen it, it's the most impressive performance by a two-year-old maybe anywhere. And I mean, people were just stunned, and Trombetta in his, when I talked to him on Sunday night, sort of neutral response from Mike when he said, "Yeah, he's been nice so far." Okay, 101 buyer destroying the Nashua, and the horses that are going to come out of that race are going to go do things. Talk about getting involved, buying in to this horse after the first start. It's a very interesting story.
Yeah, so as you know, Steve, we're constantly on the lookout for what we call blue sky prospects. You know, horses that have shown some potential on the racetrack that we believe could go to levels that can put our partners not just in the paddock, but in the winner's circle in major races across the country. And we try to identify this talent at a very young stage in a horse's career. so actually, Independence Hall ran at Parks in a 7-furlong maiden special weight about 15 minutes prior to sharing winning the Salima. And I was paying attention to the races that day. It was Pennsylvania Derby Day at Parks, and this horse caught my eye. It was very impressive winning his debut. He won by about 4 and change, going 7/8. Rosario was there that day. He rode him, tucked in behind a wall of horses, found a seam at the elbow of the turn, and powered away in very impressive fashion, never really being asked to do so, and immediately got on the horn and tried to find my way to how this horse might be able to be acquired. And Mike Trombetta, I had just developed a relationship with Mike on another filly that we had acquired within the barn, so that was a really important part of the deal. And got on the phone with Mr. Verratti, the original owner of the colt, and we really seemed to have a nice synergy between the two of us. And literally within 24 hours of the horse crossing the wire, we had a deal signed on the dotted line for Eclipse to acquire controlling interest in the colt. So that part of it was silky smooth. And those things have to come together well in order for a healthy partnership to be formed. And we were lucky enough to have the Verrattis welcome us in and, create a win-win situation for them where they could take some money and risk off the table and still retain an interest in the colt. And shortly thereafter, the fellas over at Twin Creeks, Steve Davison and Randy Gulat, who had been interested in pursuing Independence Hall as well. It came to me that they were wanting to get involved with the horse. They owned Constitution, still own equity in Constitution as a stallion, so it made all the sense in the world. We've partnered with them in the past. They're fantastic guys. They've been down this road before. So it all came together really beautifully. quite frankly, Steve, I was wanting to go a much more conservative path with Independence Hall, and he was entered the Thursday prior to the Nashua in an allowance race going a one-turn mile at Laurel, and I was beside myself when a maintenance issue popped up and races had to be canceled. The mysterious water main that broke on the apron by the finish line, and I was beside myself. I know, you know, in situations when you've got horses like this, everything needs to go absolutely perfect, and I thought we were getting knocked off course here in this conservative spot that we had picked, which looked picture perfect at the time, to keep him on a, you know, a conservative trajectory, but an upward trajectory. We were knocked off course, and, you know, Joel Rosario, who rode him in his debut, had committed to go ride him at Laurel on a Thursday. He went on the Wednesday night. He was staying in a hotel. Poor guy got washed out, literally, and he was committed to ride in California on Sunday, so he couldn't get back to ride him in the Nashua, so we were fortunate to grab the services of Jose Ortiz. I really didn't want to run him in such a salty race, to be honest with you, but we had no option. It was a really tough and deep rendition of the Nashua, toughest field I'd seen in years for that race. And, you know, we knew we were bringing a loaded gun to the fight, but we just didn't know seasoning-wise and, you know, the level of competition he was up against, what to expect. And needless to say, the performance he delivered was simply off the charts. It was beyond what we could ever anticipate. We knew we had a very good colt on our hands going into it, but for him to display that type of brilliance was it was a blessing and a curse, because we wanted to see him show the talent that we thought he had, but we didn't know that that he was just going to run off the screen the way he did. And now that as exciting as that is, it makes it a little bit more tricky to try to plot out a course moving forward, but we wouldn't trade this position for anything in the world, that's for sure.
Well, we'll talk to Mike later in the week, but I think back to a performance of Sweet Northern Saint that this was early on in my involvement in the show, and I called him, and it was after, it might have been after the Miracle Wood, and I said, Mike, you want to come on the show? I'd like to talk to you about your Derby horse. And he said, I don't know if I've got a Derby horse. I said, I think you got a Derby horse. Well, this one is a little different, because everybody saw this. I mean, Sweet Northern Saint wasn't at the beginning, wasn't as evident immediately, but very exciting. And people were just agog. I mean, you must have heard from all kinds of people.
Yeah, it was wild. I mean, it was certainly the icing on the cake to a dream weekend. It's funny. I was leaving Santa Anita on Sunday morning. Old college buddy that I played soccer with had a son playing in a soccer tournament in Irvine. So I wanted to stop on my way back down to Del Mar and catch up with my buddy and see his son play a little soccer. And so I did that and immediately jammed out of there and was down at OC Tavern, a mini satellite place between Santa Anita and Del Mar, because I wanted to watch it on a big screen, not on my phone. And I sort of found myself a quiet corner, and it was a pretty decent crowd in OC Tavern that day. It was NFL football and races and all sorts of stuff. And they actually had the audio on in the entire race book there for the Nashua, and people were just floored. They couldn't believe what they were seeing. And needless to say, I was a bit excited and was trying to stay quiet in the corner, but drew a little attention to myself. And it was wild. The phone started ringing off the hook. And now, of course, you know, the business side of it comes into play. And of course, we're honored and flattered to be receiving quite a bit of interest from some major players in the game on the Stallion Station side of it, and just thrilled for our partners to be in this position, and to have a colt with this type of raw ability is what we live for. And for anybody that's in the game, I hope that at some point in their career they could experience even a fraction of what our guys got to experience with Sharon on Friday, and to be associated with a promising colt that, touch wood, has Derby aspirations like Independence Hall.
Well, he's a Constitution, and of course, among the first crop sires, a Constitution has been, you know, one of the real talking stallions thus far. This this was just remarkable, out of a Cape Town mare too, which, you know, these days you don't see all that often, and bred by Woodford, and just an exciting situation. How much conversation have you had since Sunday with Mike about, you know, about targets and about timing, and how did he come out of it?
Well, the good part about it is, the most important thing is, Touchwood has come out of it really well. He's back at Fair Hill, which is ironic because Sharing's on her way there right now. So to have a filly like her and a colt like him posting up at Fair Hill right now is pretty exciting stuff, especially for their local community, which is fantastic. Frankly, Steve, we wanted to let the dust settle all day yesterday. I was traveling, but yes, Randy and Steve of Twin Creeks are here in Kentucky. I just landed late last night, so we're going to huddle up today and loop Mr. Verratti and, of course, Mike in on our discussions and map out a plan of attack here. You know, we're still 6 months away, which is an eternity. I mean, if it was 6 hours away, it would feel like an eternity as far as the Kentucky Derby is concerned. But you got to start planning and work your way backwards from the first Saturday in May. So we're just going to take a methodical approach. I'll try to have a meeting of the minds. Thankfully, we've had experience in this realm before, so we're going to try to grasp onto some of that and, you know, learn from some of our mistakes in the past and hopefully get it right this time. But we feel as though we've got the horse that's capable of taking us to the promised land, and now we just need to stay out of his way and not mess it up, hopefully.
Well, Independence Hall on Sunday, Sharing on Friday, and how about coming up stunting at Aqueduct in a maiden later this week? What can you tell us about stunting before I ask you about a few other Eclipse Thoroughbred partner horses?
Yeah, here you go, another Todd Pletcher stallion, Daredevil. You know, it's just unbelievable. You know, we didn't even give Todd credit for Constitution, who's the sire of Independence Hall, but Daredevil is by More Than Ready. Shocker, another Todd Pletcher stallion, who, you know, we liked a handful of them at the sales throughout the yearling and two-year-old auction. We got our hands on this filly. She's a really elegant, well-put-together filly that had trained actually quite well at Saratoga and had an untimely illness just before she was ready to make a debut there. We regrouped, got her healthy. She's shown talent here and there to suggest that she's got a little bit of something. But as two-year-olds will typically do, she's thrown in a few subpar, just as Todd would say, okay performances in the morning. She's got some turf pedigree, so we're hoping that she's able to really up her game on the grass. She's a filly that wouldn't surprise us if she went out there and ran forwardly in her first start. But to say that we're walking over there with supreme confidence, I'd be lying to you. I think we're just looking for a nice outing. She's drawn really wide, going three quarters on the grass, which is a little bit of an obstacle. And I don't love first-time starters to not have something holding them in the starting gate outside of them, because they tend to veer out when that's the case. But she's a lovely filly, and we're looking forward to getting her started on Friday for sure.
You know, if you're going to say lovely filly, you have to pay royalties to Christophe Clément, because he's got a patent on the lovely filly. And so he's the only person allowed to say lovely filly.
All right, well, then I'll take it back, and I hope Christophe doesn't come after me.
Oh, I love it. She's out of Divine Gift, the Divine Park mayor, who actually is a sister of Lulu Wong, who was a nice, kind of a nice Midwest steak place sprinter, and was a half sister of her by Badge of Silver. And I got to ask you about a couple of big names, and I see that Moretti is getting close to a return. He's working down at Palm Beach Downs already, and under the watchful eye of the alligator in the pond, and the $900,000 Moretti. That, you know, obviously he's got talent, and talk about the winter upcoming and what the hopes are and how to get him back rolling.
Yeah, Moretti's an impeccably bred son of Medaglia d'Oro out of Rigoletto, which makes him a half-brother to Battle of Midway. And he started his career last year in fine fashion. He was second first time out, and then we stretched him out to a mile and an eighth at Aqueduct, and he won impressively. He was the favorite of the Withers and unfortunately came up with an injury out of that race, and it sidelined him since. And we knew that he wasn't going to make the classics at that time, so we really took a conservative approach and just backed off entirely. The folks down at Peyton have done a really good job with him and sent him on to Todd at Palm Beach Downs. He's a horse that we always thought would be a late bloomer. We had hoped to have him ready for the classics. It just wasn't meant to be. And now that that has passed, we've really taken a slow approach. He's on the verge of being ready to run. We're really encouraged because he was never a flashy workhorse leading up to his debut and in the early part of his initial campaign. But he is showing a lot more oomph in his breezes on the comeback trail right now. You know, Mike Capoli is our partner on the colt, and now that he's just about race ready, Todd is out here in Kentucky. We had planned to huddle up in the next couple days as well and see what's on the horizon for him. But he's an exciting colt, and, you know, recent history has told us that these later developers that don't hit the classics and avoid that that rugged campaign can be big-time handicap horses at four and beyond, and we're hoping that he fits that profile.
Nice. And, of course, he broke his maiden late in his two-year-old year and then tried the Withers and came out of that with the issue and taking the majority of the year. So nice to have this, you know, this type. Everybody thinks the three-year-olds with talent, have already flashed it and created their resumes, and some being shipped off, for stallion duty. But a horse like this can get, can really become a lot of fun, can be a cold front, that kind of a type that goes on for nice exploits. You know, there were plenty of other two-year-olds going to, start to run out of time, Aaron, but Pipes, and you wanted to get Bulletproof One in to the Juvie Turf Sprint, settled for the Golden State race. You ran Escapade in the Ken Matty, of course. Gray Magicians had really a nice, productive year. I see Farmington Road in recent weeks, and they're paved. A lot of good, really, it's been a great year. And not to say that the season's over, because we still have got 2 months of racing, but it's been a special year for Eclipse.
No doubt about it. It's a testament to our partners who support us, with their hard-earned dollars, week in and week out, month in and month out, every year. It's humbling and flattering to have a group of people who really do trust us to be able to take them where they want to be. We certainly swing and miss a lot more than we strike, but we hope that when we do strike, it makes up for the misses and provides our partners with the experience that they most definitely deserve. So we appreciate it. We consider this the ultimate what have you done for me lately business, and every year we go into it thinking it's a rebuilding year and how are we going to replenish the quality stock that has cycled through the program. But I believe that's what separates the men from the boys, is being able to come up with these big horses year in and year out, and that's certainly what we strive to do and what our partners deserve. So it keeps us hungry, and we're hungrier than ever right now, that's for sure.
Aaron Wellman, everybody, Eclipse Thoroughbred Partners, EclipseTBPartners.com. If you want to get involved at a high level, and there's all different levels too, because active horses, the way things evolved with the buy-in on Independence Hall, young horses, two-year-old in training, sale purchases, yearling purchases, and development candidates, and so much more. Next couple of days, of course, at the sales, and if you see Aaron, talk to him, congratulate him, and ask him about getting involved at Eclipse. Aaron, so happy for you, and thank you.
Thank you, Steve, and I can never underestimate how important it is what you do. Keep doing what you're doing. The industry needs you. We appreciate it, and most importantly, you just get well.
Too kind. Aaron Wellman, everybody. Unbelievable. Sharing an Independence Hall. That's enough for any ownership, anybody that operates in the game. So to have them perform the way they did within 48 hours, it's pretty amazing. Let's take a break. Top of the hour, Andy Serling's going to join us. Nacho Correas, Brad Cox, John White, and Vince DeGregory are going to come sit down here as well. We're going to catch up tomorrow. We're talking about Graham Motion. Graham will be home and available tomorrow for a conversation. We'll have him then. And who else? Johnny. Johnny traveled back yesterday, so we'll get to Johnny D tomorrow and get his postscript. Paul Matisse. We've got to do our gambling sifting and what went right, what went wrong. Pete Fornatale tomorrow, too. Pete, I didn't see Pete, actually, now that I think about it, Friday and Saturday. I pretty much just go back and forth from the paddock to the track apron all day long. I did, but I didn't see Pete. Back after this, though, Andy Serling from the New York Racing Association.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Amazing achievements for Pennsylvania breeds on the world stage. Thanks to Finest City, Unique Bella, and Shamrock Rose, PA joins Kentucky as the only state in the past decade to breed Eclipse Award champions three straight years. Add that to our unmatched incentives. Plus, our racehorse development fund can only be used to support PA breeding and racing. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up with ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at expressbet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Back at the races and top of hour two, fun conversation with Aaron Wellman. And the, in fact, next starter for Aaron and Eclipse at Aqueduct, stunting. And speaking of Aqueduct, 3 days in the books, and it was three good days of racing. Obviously, a lot of, you know, focus on what was happening out here, but as we just talked with Aaron about Independence Hall Sunday in the Nashua, unbelievable.